This is Dr. Donald S. Reinhardt. For a long time, I've done my best to make a successful downstream tape to clarify downstream players for you. Let's see how you like this. I'll break in right now. This is all ad lib. And up until now, I failed. But now I'm really going to take an attempt at it. I'm taking a day off, frankly, to do this. So I'm really going to dig in. I do suggest that you make notes. I think it's so involved that notes are a must. So I'm going to start in by bringing something up that I think all of you should give some thought to immediately, whether you're a downstream or an upstream, just if you're a brass performer. At your next dental checkup, have your dentist make impressions of your upper and lower teeth. You keep the impressions, not the dentist. After all, you paid for them. Put them in a small box with your name and date on the box. And put that box somewhere where if you had to, you could locate it. Let's hope you don't have to locate it. This should be done about every 5 years, according to my dentist. If an accident occurred and you lost a tooth or teeth, the dentist, if he did not have impressions, he has no means of going by what you had, or what you had lost, I should say. Therefore, he puts in teeth that simply make you look prettier. Now, just recently, I had a good example of that by a fellow who came to me from Atlanta, Georgia, a trumpet player, who was smashed up in a taxi cab. He was thrown forward, and his head hit the glass partition, and skin had to be grafted on his forehead, and his mouth hit the edge of the driver's seat and immediately took 4 upper front teeth out and cut his lip unmercifully. The lip needed stitches, and of course, he needed teeth. Now, under such conditions, what does a dentist do? Well, maybe he can make your wife happy, or your mother, or some close relative, by the fact that you look a little better now with the teeth that he just made for you. But that is not very conducive to good, consistent brass playing. It took me almost 5 months for this individual to get him playing again. And he did have a wife and 4 kids at home, and did depend on his 3-valve abilities to produce much-needed revenue for the living of his family and himself. Now, had he had made the teeth impressions that I'm talking of and asking you to do now, all of this could have been averted up to this point. Now, you spend half your life developing an embouchure that meets today's requirements in range, endurance, power, flexibility, and whatnot. You realize the teeth are the backbone of that embouchure. And you start moving the teeth around, you start making trouble. Therefore, I hope you can see that I'm bringing up a point that is vitally important. I wish somebody had told me about it. So do not take this matter lightly. I'm not trying to take up your time. My dentist, Dr. Bertram Krager, suggested it when I told him the problems that some of you people have with teeth. So why not take him up on it? It is not very expensive to get ordinary impressions made of the upper and lower sets of teeth. Just put them away in a box. Then if some accident does befall you and you lose a tooth or teeth, you have some means of duplication. Now, I realize that his lip had stitches in it and all that, but I'm sure he would have been playing much sooner if he had something closer to his former set of teeth. Now, you just think that over a minute. That is very important. Don't wait. Get it done now. If you have any, desires for the future in the brass playing profession, get that done now. I will not repeat it. You've heard it. You do it. Now, over the years, I've told you I've tried to make a downstream type of tape because I always feel that the downstream performers, as numerous as they are, that they're being cheated, because I never made a tape as comprehensive as I did for the upstream type of player. Now, I suggest, again, that throughout this, you do make notes, because it is quite involved. I've simplified it as much as I possibly can, and I'm available for questions as soon as you're through hearing this tape, or at any other time for that matter. I'm going to call this little discussion, "So you think that you are a downstream type performer in the pivot system." Outwardly speaking, the performer who utilizes more upper lip than lower during the placement of the mouthpiece and the playing may be identified as one of the downstream types or categories in my pivot system. In a minority of cases, the mouthpiece placement may extend upward to such an extent that it actually will utilize as much as 90% of the upper lip and only 10% of the lower. However, in the majority of cases, 3/4 upper lip and 1/4 lower, 2/3 upper lip and 1/3 lower, and even extend downward to such a point that there is only a trifle more upper lip utilized than the lower. In my pivot system, physical types 1, 3, 3A, and 3B are considered the downstream types. An accurate analysis in this regard may only be achieved by visual observation of the performer's embouchure while placing and playing through a transparent plastic mouthpiece, so that the mouthpiece placement and overall playing mannerisms can be exposed. The use of metal rims, that is, metal rims without cups, shoulders, throats, and backbores, cannot possibly provide the instructor with an accurate analysis in this regard, because the blowing resistance of the mouthpiece is not present during the viewing of the embouchure. For this, a transparent plastic mouthpiece is positively a must. This entire group of high mouthpiece placement performers project more upper lip than lower into the cups of their mouthpieces during the blowing. Therefore, it is quite obvious that their airstreams will travel in a downward direction into the cup of the mouthpiece, striking more toward the lower rim of the mouthpiece for the upper register, and more toward the throat of the mouthpiece for the lower register. A split second after the airstream strikes into the cup of the mouthpiece, a counterclockwise spiral of the airstream commences as it passes through the remainder of the mouthpiece cup, shoulder, throat, and back pore, and into the leader pipe of the instrument. This spiral motion is much like the water running out of the sink or bathtub. North of the equator, the spiral is counterclockwise. South of the equator, clockwise. Now let me make a little summary of the discussion that I've just related to you. Take your finger, your forefinger, your right forefinger, and start the buzz. In other words, form your lips as though you're going to play and blow, and notice where your airstream strikes. Back your, if your forefinger is touching your chin, you'll notice the airstream strikes at that point. Now, if you go to blow a higher note, it strikes in more toward the chin. If you blow a lower note and the embouchure is more relaxed, it strikes more toward the throat. I didn't say into the throat. I said toward the throat. Now, just think about that for a minute. Now, wherever that airstream strikes, it starts a counterclockwise motion or a spiral through the remainder of the cup, the shoulder, the throat, the back pore of the mouthpiece, and into the leader pipe of the instrument. This can be proven very quickly with a plastic mouthpiece and a flashlight if these things are pointed out to the inexperienced eye. You will notice that bubbles form in the bottom of the cup, and at that point, the spiral commences, and of course, it disappears. On different people, I've had them use a mouthful of water. With others, a mouthful of smoke, and you can see the airstream where it hits and where it starts to spiral. Now, it's really all I've said thus far, so I hope that you understand me up to this point. Anyway, because the airstream strikes closer to the rim in the lower half of the mouthpiece cup for the upper register, more spirals are required to pass out of the remainder of the mouthpiece and into the instrument. Hence, with this as one of the basic factors, the upper register responds with a greater blowing resistance than the middle and lower registers. For the extreme lower tones, the airstream strikes a trifle below the mouthpiece throat, that is the hole in the mouthpiece, although not directly into the throat. I want to repeat that. Although not directly into the throat. Therefore, a minimal blowing resistance for the lower tones. From these facts alone, without going deeper into brass instrument theory, you can see that upper tones require a greater blowing resistance and less air in quantity, whereas the lower tones require much less blowing resistance and more air in quantity. The air velocity, or the speed in which the air column is delivered, controls the required dynamic levels utilized in the plane. I used to make a rule to various students. I'd say, think of it this way. And of course, you are close in theory in thinking this way. Theoretically, high C on trumpet blows with almost twice the resistance of a third space C on trumpet and requires about half the air quantity. Now reverse that procedure. From the high C down to the middle C, descending that is, the middle C would require less air pressure, in fact, just half the amount of air pressure, but twice the air quantity. That's why, if you overbreathe for the extreme upper register, dizziness, light spots, little pink elephants, pain in the back of the head, take over. In other words, you're taking in a lot of air that you can't use. A similar figure for the same player, one octave lower. Let us say he's playing a four-bar phrase in the high register, and the phrase starts on a C, a high C, and now he does the same phrase, note for note the same, one octave lower, and of course that means starting on a middle C. The lower phrase will require twice the air quantity and half the air pressure at similar dynamic levels. Now that theory has been proven. Theoretically, all downstream performers utilize their upper lips as anchor spots and lower lips as the control points. However, all upper lips are much more sensitive and more prone to swelling than the lower lips. And this means that the lower lip should receive the brunt of the playing burden embouchure-wise. This must be achieved, however, without receding the position of the jaw while so doing. All of these high mouthpiece placement types would do well to utilize this weight on the lower lip theory right from the outset. And I repeat, without receding the position of the lower jaw while so doing. Travel as high into the upper register as possible in this manner, and use any additional upper lip mouthpiece weight very sparingly for the last few notes in the range. And better still, avoid its use entirely, if possible. Since nearly all of these high mouthpiece placement types can be accused of using too much upper lip pressure, especially when even a little fatigued, while ascending, feel that you are chasing the horn. Do not permit it to chase you. This means that if additional mouthpiece pressure is required for the uprester, exert a forward pressure against the mouthpiece rim. This creates what we call puckered resistance in the pivot system. Rather than increasing the mouthpiece pressure with additional left arm push, which we call mouthpiece pressure. In modern brass playing, a force is used against an opposing force. Therefore, if 3 pounds of mouthpiece pressure is applied against the lips with the mouthpiece, then 3 pounds of pressing forward is intended to neutralize the two opposing forces. In the pivot system, therefore, we press to neutralize, not to press, so to speak. The application of these two forces in the proper manner is a must for any successful brass performer. Let us think for a minute of the person who blows his cheeks out, blows his neck out, wears a collar 3 sizes larger to play the job or the gig, and he looks like he's killing himself with pressure. Still, 4 hours later, when you're so tired, you can hardly play the next note, he is fresh as a daisy. Why? Because unknowingly, even if he doesn't know a thing about the mechanics of playing, he is neutralizing two forces. In short, the puffed cheeks pushing forward so great that the mouthpiece pressure exerted against the embouchure with the puffed cheeks must be equally as great. And 3 pounds forward and 3 pounds backward is not 6 pounds, it's 0 pounds. I hope you took some math anyway. All of the downstream types, unless they are instructed to the contrary, must remember and utilize the 3-point embouchure lubrication of the pivot system. Number one, the saliva wetting of the entire outer embouchure. Number two, the saliva wetting of both mouth corners. And number three, the saliva wetting of the teeth and gums of these 3 points should prevail throughout the playing. Many players wet their outer embouchures and mouth corners and completely neglect to wet their teeth and gums and then tell me their mouthpiece is slipping on the outside. Now, there's a lot of little rules that come in here, and I want to give you some of them at least. It all comes under the heading of lubrication. I think nearly every player can play with a wet embouchure if he took the time to develop it. I myself played dry for 8 years. I'll tell you about that in person because I don't want to take the time to talk about the first person on the tape. People with oily skins during the warm weather, or when playing under hot studio or stage lights, with the mouthpiece pressure, find that oil from the pores in the skin plus perspiration, two unwanted lubricants, by the way, plus the 3-point lubrication I just spoke of with saliva, well, produce ideal skating rink facilities. And this must be avoided. This type of player should on occasion wipe his lips and mouthpiece dry with his handkerchief and then re-wet the three-point lubrication as explained and continue playing. This is particularly important to performers with oily skins. Another point. When mouth corners have a tendency to stick, or do stick from time to time, when a mouth corner inhalation is being enacted, embouchure distortion takes place. That is embouchure distortion onto the rim of the mouthpiece. That type of player, I might mention right here, Woody Herman's first and second herds were told to use White's vitamin A and D ointment, brown label, after they wet their lips and mouth corners and teeth and gums, in addition to wet mouth corners, to apply a liberal coating of this salve, White's vitamin A and D ointment, to prevent sticking. Now, some use it all the time. Some use it on occasion. Some never use it. So why not find out where you stand and then act accordingly? Players who must play outdoors a great deal find greasing the mouth corners a great benefit because the air dries up the mouth corners very quickly. If your mouth has a tendency to dry up quickly, or you have a dry mouth, so to speak, from nerves or upset stomach or other reasons, I suggest that from time to time, while you're not playing, of course, press the flat of your tongue against the roof of your mouth just for a couple of seconds, then release it and relax the tongue, and the flow of saliva will start almost immediately on most players. Remember this, it might pull you out of a tight spot from time to time. Lubrication is a problem, and it's not my point to go into it right here, because I've got too many other things to go into. The only thing I'll say is, from the outset of your studies in the pivot system, particularly as a downstream type, I would start with a wet embouchure, wet mouth corners, and a wet inner embouchure, that's teeth and gums. However, I'll be happy to discuss that with you if there's other problems involved that we're not thinking of at the moment. Those who utilize more upper lip than lower during the placement and the playing must approach their embouchures from the top down, never the bottom up. And you better write that one down. In short, place the mouthpiece on the north side in the playing groove and then come down into position. If you place too low, and the lips are partly dry, or your whiskers a trifle too long, you will pull up on the upper lip and pull it out of its playing position. And this can and does often lead to serious embouchure trouble. Therefore, I say, place a little to the north side and then come down, never from the south side and then come up. Certainly not if you're a downstream type performer. Please remember that. It is important. Downstream types have the advantage over the upstreams because they can avail themselves to the four steps in the pivot system buzzing procedure. This, however, must receive a rather lengthy explanation and apart from this discussion. One more point. When fatigue sets in, do not use your upper lip as a meat hook to hang your mouthpiece on. This is one of the commonest of all errors of the downstream types. Do not join this club. I know your instrument gets heavy sometimes, particularly after several hours on the gig, particularly if you're using a lot of mutes. But you must hold up that instrument, because with that constant sag on the upper lip, you automatically transfer the pressure there toward the end of the gig, then you complain to me about endurance, flexibility, range, and whatnot. Now, you better think that one over. Ever since 1940, in New York, when I gave my first orientation and analysis sessions, I've always invited students to tape or record their lessons in any way they wanted to. Oddly enough, very few ever took advantage of this. Now, however, we have cassettes, and I have several cassettes on hand, that is, recorders. So all you have to bring is the hour or hour and a half cassette along with you, and I record your entire lesson, what takes place in the room. Now, that is highly beneficial, and I believe I'm one of the few teachers in the country that will permit it. So I believe very strongly that as human beings, you go to a teacher the same as I did, and you expect him to say a couple things are wrong that you know very well are wrong. And if he does, well, I guess he's a great man, so to speak. But supposing the teacher does mention those two things, but along with it, another eight things. Well, the other eight are completely forgotten, and you remember the two things that you thought of in the first place, mainly because you thought of them. Your cassette recordings take care of that little misdemeanor on your part. So I'm all for it. So I do type, and I do cassettes. I do both. But when discussions get very long, it would take me hours and hours to type it, and you have it right on cassettes anytime you want to hear it at home. Now, believe me, that's an advantage any way you want to look at it. And I think you agree with that, too. So I'm not only inviting you, I'm saying it's more or less mandatory that you do that from your first lesson on. Now, I know this is might be bugging you momentarily, at least. What is a pivot? I'll do this just as briefly and concisely as possible. The placement of the mouthpiece in the so-called groove on the outer embouchure must not be permitted to move out of this position while ascending or descending the register of the instrument. However, some degree of muscular elasticity must be experienced while so doing. And don't forget, the pivot does occur on both lips, not only one lip. Too many people misunderstand that point. Now, the lips and mouthpiece, as one unit, must move vertically on the track of the inner embouchure. That's more or less the teeth for trumpet, the teeth and gums for trombone. Or whether or not this movement is to be in an upward or a downward direction to ascend or descend the register of the instrument depends strictly upon the performer's particular physical type. This must be determined only after a complete analysis in this regard. and prescribed and carried out according to the laws of my pivot system. After the pivot manipulation has been mastered, there must be little or no angular motion of the instrument or alterations in the position of the head. This is my pivot, which I invented, developed, and perfected in over 50 years of experience. Not waving horns around in the breeze, as the misinformed have been and are, and no doubt will be, expounding. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Therefore, we must forgive them, for they know not what they do. The pivot system is divided into two classifications. Your first classification is for your higher placements, your downstream performers. And your second classification, classification two, is for your low placement, that is, those who utilize more lower lip than upper, and blow an upward airstream into the cup. However, I'm not talking about the type 4s or the type 2s at this time. In other words, the types 2 and 2A, the types 4 and 4A are on another tape. I'm only dealing with those who use the higher mouthpiece placements, which I mean more upper lip than lower. The type 1 may fall under two classifications. Therefore, assiduous care must be exercised while selecting the correct pivot for this type. Once the pivot has been accurately determined, its vital synchronized manipulation must be diligently borne in mind throughout the daily study and practice period, so that a permanent habit may be formed as soon as possible. I better make it clear right here that your practice room is meant for repair jobs, but your gigs or engagements are something for you to make good on. And remember, reputations are hard to get. Lessons are easy to get. So when you go on the gig, forget what occurred in the practice room. Forget Reinhardt. Forget Pivot. Forget Philly. Just remember to make good. Now I'm going on here at this point. It gets rather involved, believe me. So as far as your correct embouchure and jaw development is concerned, it must be thoroughly comprehended that your success with a pivot system depends almost entirely upon your initial correct physical type analysis. Otherwise, it would be absolutely impossible for you to determine which one of the two pivot classifications to employ. Utilizing your correct physical pivot from the outset is like using the right key in the right lock to open the door. As far as correct type analysis is concerned, I better repeat, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Your pivot must be determined as soon as possible. Now, with some players, that is not possible during the orientation. I can get a general idea, but with some, the embouchures are so loose that I must make that correction before I can make the pivot correction. But generally speaking, that is not the case. That's only in a minority of cases. So, the type 1, that is some of the type 1s, and the type 3A downstream performers, to ascend from a third space C on trumpet, and from a space above the staff B flat on trombone, the following considerations must be indelibly impressed. I suggest that you make notes on this as briefly as possible, but I'll talk all around it to try to make you see the light, so to speak. Number one, don't forget, you're ascending now from a third space C on trumpet or a middle B flat and trombone. We're slurring upward. Now let us say we're going to slur an octave. We're going on trumpet from C to high C, on trombone from B flat to high B flat. Feel that the rim of the mouthpiece and the flesh of the firm embouchure formation immediately under the rim are being pushed in a slightly upward direction toward the nose on the track of the inner embouchure. Individual differences demand that in many cases this inner embouchure track will be diagonally upward toward the right side or toward the left side while enacting this prescribed upward push. Under no circumstances should the mouthpiece position upon the outer embouchure be permitted to slide upward and out of the playing groove, or the lower lip to pull downward and out of the playing groove from under the rim of the mouthpiece. While it is true that the playing groove on the outer embouchure must be permitted to have some degree of freedom and elasticity, it must be thoroughly understood that the rim of the mouthpiece must never be permitted to ride out of this groove and thereby disturb or destroy the all-important hermetic seal. That's the seal between your rim and the lips themselves. This vital pivot maneuver must be achieved in order to provide a lineup between the teeth and lips so that the response of the lip vibrations is not impeded or obliterated in any particular part of the range. The core or center of the sound must dictate what degree of prescribed upward push to employ. The position of the performer's head should be erect and relaxed. Little or no angular motion of the instrument should be required. Now let me break that down for you. The head position should not change. The angle of the instrument at this particular time should not change. But the mouthpiece and lips as one unit should push slightly upward in the track of the inner embouchure. The inner embouchure is the teeth and gums, if you remember. And the core of the sound should dictate as to how much of this so-called push-up to employ. Now, once your pivot is mastered, this is so minimized, you need a microscope to find it. But right now, please follow instructions. You will demonstrate this and it will be taken care of in your pivot stabilizer. All points that I give you in your lessons, and most, 10 points to ascend, 7 points to descend, all those points, each page must be treated as a separate entity, but the entity itself must be exaggerated so that when you say you want to forget Pivot, you want to forget Reinhardt, you want to forget Philly, just enough rubs off into the subconscious to take over. That is the point of exaggeration at this time. I was a student of Dr. Fernberger. I had him for 5 years in psychology. And needless to say, he helped me a great deal in my teaching, particularly on this point. In order to establish a point, it must be exaggerated in a physical sense so that your feel can be developed as quickly as possible for these little maneuvers that we're going to speak of. Please keep that in mind. Number two. We're still talking about a type, of the type 1s, or the type 3A. While ascending, the outer lower lip membrane must reach slightly inward and over the lower teeth. However, no bunching up of the flesh in the chin and lower lip area should be tolerated while so doing. The chin area should be pointed, flat, and firm. The upper lip should reach slightly downward and backward toward the upper teeth, like sounding the letter M or Mike, so that it slightly overlaps the lower lip at the vibrating point. While the lower lip membrane is reaching inward and over the lower teeth, and the upper lip is reaching downward and backward toward the upper teeth. That's a buzzing embouchure formation, by the way. Both mouth corners must push forward in a firm, deliberate manner toward the rim of the mouthpiece. Well, that's just the opposite of your old-time smile system. This forward movement of the mouth corners occurring at the moment of the initial attack forms and sets the lip pucker as utilized by my pivot system. However, this forward movement of the mouth corners must be arrested by firm but never smiling mouth corners and the correct distribution of mouthpiece contact pressure so that the hermetic seal, that is the seal between the rim of the mouthpiece and the flesh of the outer embouchure, is not disturbed or destroyed while so doing. This is achieved by a neutralization of both the forward pressure, that is the pucket resistance, and the backward pressure, that is the mouthpiece pressure, upon the lips. With many performers, their mouth corners move both forward and downward with the pointed, with this flat, firm chin. I call that the Fu Manchu or tobacco juice mouth corners. This forward and downward, in some cases, movement of the mouth corners must occur immediately following the peak of the inhalation, without the slightest delay. Never bottle up the air and delay any attack. This backing up of the air column in the mouth and throat areas causes tremendous strain in the throat and neck and is one of the chief causes of neck puffing. Some performers with this malady wear collars several sizes larger to play their engagement. A clean, crisp attack must be the result from correct nervous and muscular timing, never from any form of delay. You do not delay when you speak. Therefore, do not delay when you play. The evils of tongue penetration and of smiling to a sin, you certainly should be acquainted with by this time. Spitting seeds, threads, or confetti from the tip of the tongue to create a so-called pointed attack, and the old-time smile to ascend bit are two of the most destructive playing assertions at all time. I've seen it ruin thousands of players who gave up because of such instruction. Let me say that should have died at Plymouth Rock. Unfortunately, with some teachers, it didn't. While ascending, always feel that you are chasing the horn and do not permit it to chase you. I mean, feel that you're pressing forward when the pressure increase is required on some players. But don't allow it to chase you. In other words, don't get too much left arm in the thing. Number three, while ascending, the jaw must protrude. Move slightly upward, and to one side or the other, as the case may be. This portion of the pivot is extremely important, and the degree of usage of each of the three factors employed requires diligent study, meticulous personal analysis, and consistent perseverance on the part of the performer. Permit the core or center of the sound to dictate and to assist you in your endeavors. Some players benefit greatly by doing their pivot exercises with their eyes closed, because I believe closing the eyes enhances the feel with most performers. Number four, basically, the upper tone is produced by a combination of two factors. One, how far the jaw is protruded. And two, how much red of the outer lower lip membrane is inward and over the lower teeth. Again, permit the core or center of the sound to assist you in determining this. In case you lost yourself, I'm still talking about one of the type ones and the 3A pivot. They're both downstreams, what I'm discussing right now. And this is called pivot classification one. Number five, type 3A downstream performers have the general tendency to press entirely too much on their upper lips. However, this unwanted condition will soon be alleviated by my jaw retention drill, which will be presented in detail during your orientation. Eventually, more weight will be experienced on the lower lip than on the upper. However, at the outset, some performers find this extremely difficult. Number six, since the lip aperture, that is the space in the lips being blown open, not tongued open, I trust, is approximately the same size for a penis move, middle concert B-flat, as it is for a fortissimo, high concert B-flat, one octave higher, it is obvious that it is both musically and mechanically correct to crescendo while ascending and decrescendo while descending, unless indicated to the contrary. While an embouchure is in its formative stages, and by that I mean, if you do not possess a consistent G above high C on trumpet, and the F above the high B flat on trombone, I consider your embouchure in formative stages. The lower note should be thinner before ascending. This is vital because it prevents the lip aperture from spreading too much before ascending. This is a pivot system must. Do not take it lightly. Number 7. Since the pivot system presents 8 different tongue types in this book, and in each of the 8 tongue categories designated, there are as many physical deviations as there are performers. It is impossible, without a complete physical analysis and consultation, to determine accurately and to be specific, as would be desirable with this important point. A general contour and size of the tongue and the mouth orifice must determine the correct physical tongue type to employ. In a general sense, however, it may be stated that the elevation of the tongue arch must increase while ascending, forming a tongue arch with the vowel E and directing the air column towards the roof of the mouth are 2 tongue arch basics that seem to assist many performers while ascending. Excuse me. During your orientation, I will show you and demonstrate the type 5 tongue for slurring and sustaining, and the type 5 tongue with the Herbert Clark type of attack. And then we will find out where you stand with your tongue. That's part of your orientation. Number 8. From the moment of the attack on the initial note and throughout the playing, muscular firmness must be experienced throughout the lower extremities, particularly in the posterior. This essential lower extremity firmness must occur throughout the playing, whether standing or sitting to perform. The firmness should actually occur at the very instant of the attack. And I might also include the thighs on that. That's why when standing, from the knees should be bent slightly. No, very slight. That gives you room to tighten the thighs the way they should be. It's for this reason that many brass performers spread their legs rather excessively during a seated performance and look as though they were doing the bumps while in a standing position, particularly while playing in the extreme high register. No doubt, some of the gestures while standing can come under the heading of good old-fashioned American showmanship. However, it is a fact that for many performers, this must be considered a must. Number 9. While ascending, a synchronized lift should be experienced in the diaphragm and abdominal regions, commencing all the way down from the pelvic area, not just at the point of the diaphragm. The longer the ascending interval, the more pronounced this essential synchronized lift must become. This physical mannerism, together with the correct position of the performer's head, are 2 basics in posture which will develop and maintain correct breathing as prescribed by my pivot system. Do not take these 2 points lightly. Number 10, never permit the shoulders to rise or lift during any inhalation for any reason whatsoever. Lifting the shoulders while inhaling is a positive guarantee that the player will be short-winded. And I might add, when you lift your shoulders, you tighten your throat, and that's one thing to avoid. Keep in mind that the upper echelon requires more air pressure, not more air quantity. Now let me summarize those 10 points in as few words as possible. First of all, I said when a type 1 downstream or a type 3A downstream wish to ascend, that they should feel that the mouthpiece and lips were pushing upward very slightly on the teeth, and that because of jaw differences, malocclusions, whatnots, the push-up, so to speak, may be diagonally to the right or to the left, as the case may be with the performer's particular jaw. Another way of saying the same thing, think of the letter M or mic that you're reaching down with the upper lip, down, and if possible, like you're going to roll it over the teeth, not against the teeth, but over and as though you're going in your mouth with the upper lip. Now, of course, that's impossible with most players, but that is the thought to have in mind while ascending. Now, oddly enough, that does exactly the same thing as I just told you a minute ago of the push-up. Now, the mouth corners must be firm, and the higher you go, the more you should see Fu Manchu or tobacco juice mouth corners. In other words, the mouth corners should head downward. Along with the mouth corners heading downward, the chin must be flat, pointed, and firm. And this must increase the higher you go. Some 3A performers say, gee, I feel like I'm going right off my lower lip and lower teeth when I go in the high register. That's not unusual to hear a person say that, but only it never does happen.